Thank you all for joining us and taking the risk for doing so. One thing I'd like to do, first off, is make a shout out to the Boiling Springs Church. We had decided to do this, and when we ordered the prepackaged Lord's Supper things, they weren't going to get here in time. So we contacted the Boiling Springs congregation in South Carolina, and they said, sure, we'll lend you a couple. Actually, they said, we'll give you a couple. So special thanks to them if they should happen to be watching at this time. Another thing I like to say is happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. In fact, that's what the lesson is going to be about today. We're going to look mainly at Luke chapter 15 and the parable of the prodigal son. And in that particular parable, we see three individuals that's mentioned there. And of course, we have the younger brother, the prodigal son, the older son, and the father that's talked about there. But before we get into that as well, I have on here on the board, and we have there on the bulletin board out there, I was glad when they said to me, let us enter, or let us go into the house of the Lord. Isn't it wonderful to come back? Now, I know we're not nearly at full capacity here, but for those of us who are here, it certainly is a blessing to all of us that you're all here. And even if you can't be with us and you're joining us on the live stream, we're so thankful for your presence on there as well. All right, so last month we looked at a wonderful example of motherhood, and that was the example of Mary in Luke chapters 1 and 2. And again, we're going to look at a wonderful example of fatherhood here in Luke 15. You know, there are plenty of biblical examples of fathers, but when you really look at it, how many of them are actually good examples? You have Eli in 1 Samuel. He would not restrain his sons. What a terrible example. Samuel's sons were a bit better than Eli's sons, but they were still not great. Even David's sons ended up doing unspeakable things, not the least of which was sparking a rebellion against David himself. One could look at Joseph, Mary's husband. But, you know, very little is known about him except that he was a just man and that he was a carpenter. One obvious fact is that the Lord would not have chosen Mary to raise his child had she not been betrothed to a righteous man. In fact, many of the same points that we looked at when we considered Mary can be used for looking at a good example of a father. Choose a godly wife. Choose a godly wife. Choose a godly support system and choose to follow God. So those are the three things that we looked at last month when considering mothers. But instead, we're going to look at this particular father in the parable of the prodigal son. Now, this father didn't exist. He's not a real person. The one whom he represents does exist, obviously, and the one he represents is God. And obviously, he does exist. But the father himself in this story does not. This is a parable, after all. This is a story that Jesus used to illustrate a spiritual truth. This father, as we see, represents God the Father. And for us, as men, as fathers, who better to emulate as a father than God himself? So, looking at this particular parable, it's divided up into four points. And the first one is the good father allows. The second point, the good father waits. The third, the good father receives. And four, the good father explains. And so we will read this parable now, and we'll consider all these points when we finish reading. And that's starting in Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 11. Then he said, a certain man had two sons, And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in the land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, How many of the father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare? And I perish with hunger. I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. And when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to be merry. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, Your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf. But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore the father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, Lo, these many years I have been serving you. I never transgressed your commandment at any time, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him. And he said to him, Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. All right, so considering this parable, it's one of the lengthier parables, but that is okay because, you know, some of the best parables are the longer ones. And what we see here in the first two verses, we see this first point, the good father allows. Now let's read that again. A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided them. So he divided to them his livelihood. So we know in this first verse, in verse 11, that he had two sons. This is the first thing that we learn about this particular father. It is also evident that these two sons were adults by this point, or at least very close to it, perhaps older teenagers. But very, very, very much old enough to make decisions on their own. No doubt that throughout the lifetime of these children, he did his best to raise these two boys with the same education, with the same discipline. And if you've raised more than one child, you know that doesn't always work. You can't always use the same methods for one child as you do the other, but you want to treat them equally. So you have to try to figure out the best ways in order to do that. You know, that's not the case for every father who has more than one child, though. Sometimes they do tend to play favorites sometimes. Now, not everyone, and we try not to. And I know that if you love your children, you try your best not to play favorites. I myself grew up in a home that was somewhat similar to this. My father had two sons, my brother and me. And the younger one at some point did go astray, much like this prodigal son. You know, my parents couldn't raise us exactly the same because we were two different people. Just as if you have more than one child, they are very different. They couldn't raise us the same. We responded to different things, and that makes us very different in a lot of ways. Verse 12, the younger son demands his inheritance early. The younger son demands his apparent inheritance early. Now, don't get me wrong. When I say that the father allows, the good father allows, the name of this particular point, I don't mean that he is permissive in all things at all times. In every house, there are certain rules that the head of the household has every right to set and to enforce. If one cannot abide by those rules, then at a particular age or ability, they are free to leave. Of course, that is how our society has set things up. Clearly, this younger son knew this, so his desire is to leave and to go somewhere else. And we note that in this particular parable, his father lets him. Back then, an older son received 2 shares of his father's inheritance. Therefore, his younger son is asking for 1/3 of his father's wealth at this particular time. We see that in Deuteronomy chapter 21 and verse 17, that the older son receives 2 shares, whereas everybody else gets 1 share. He knows everything that his older brother knows in terms of discipline and all the things that he's been educated in. No doubt they were educated very similarly. Yet he has gotten it into his head that he would be happier somewhere else doing something else, doing his own thing. And we see that this describes so many of us. Keeping in mind that this is a parable and not strictly about a father and his sons, that this is about the Heavenly Father and as we see in the context, the lost sheep earlier on in the chapter, the lost coin, those who go astray. Keeping that particular application in mind, we are often unhappy with whatever situation that we find ourselves in. And we often think that a change would just make everything better. If we are single, we think that finding someone and getting married will fix everything. How naive. Now, it does help out a lot. I'm not saying that. But it doesn't fix everything. You have things of your own that you have to take care of. If we are married, we might think it would be so great to be single. We might even think that it would be so great not to have to worry about what the Bible said or what God thought anymore. If we decide that that's what we want to do, God's not going to hold us. God's not going to hold us hostage. If that's what we want to do, God is going to let us do our own thing. In light of the preceding parables, obviously, we note that it's not quite that simple. He is the good shepherd who looks for us, or the woman who desperately searches for her lost coin. But the difference here is that this son is making a conscious decision to leave. He's not simply lost. He hasn't simply gone astray like the sheep has. He has made that conscious choice, I want to go. We know that this is a learning experience. All that the father does is to teach his sons, that we know in this parable. That's one way in which he shows love toward his son. You know, it may be a form of tough love, but it's love nonetheless. The young man needs to learn that these things are so much better, that things are so much better at home with his family. But the only way he is going to be convinced of that, this particular son in this particular case, the only way he is going to be convinced of that is to go out into the world himself, to be without his father, to be without his guidance for a time. We know that our own children, we know that they can't be under our roof forever. as much as we might want them to be. Or sometimes we don't. Sometimes we want them to say, no, you can go now, depending on how old they get. I know my parents certainly at some point felt that way about me. But whatever the case, we note that that when they leave, they have to make their own decisions. They have to be able to, we know that we can't look after your children forever, needing to know that your children need to know that life is so much better abiding by the training that you have given them in the Lord. In Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6, of course, we see that we ought to train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it, right? And so that is the point that we're trying to get across that to our children, is to train them up in the right way. And when they depart, they will be fine. They'll be fine. Of course, that's not the case with this prodigal son necessarily. He decides it's time for him to go off and do his own thing. Even while they're away, many of our children who remain faithful, even while they're away, they're starting their own lives. Many of the rules that you had in your home are rules that they will set up for themselves as well. Not all of them, perhaps, but the ones that they decide are good rules. Hey, I was raised this particular way and it worked out for me. Then they're going to do that. He also knows, this father also knows that if he tries to keep this child there, he will only end up causing more harm than good. It would cause strife between them. And this younger son might try to leave anyway, despite what his father's wishes are, all the more convinced that he would be happier elsewhere. And then if that were to happen, the chances of his returning would get smaller and smaller. So he lets his son go. And now he is waiting. Verses 13 through 19, the good father waits. The good father waits. We see in these few verses here that the father really isn't mentioned in this section of the parable. But we have to wonder and ask, what is he doing? What is he doing during this time? Well, he is waiting for his son, wondering if he made the right choice to let him go, no doubt. You know, and I'm sure any child or any father who's been in that situation, you wonder if you've made the right choices. I'm sure that those of you who've done that, who've had a child wander away, either physically or spiritually, you very much identify with this father here. You wonder that if you could have said or done something differently to keep them there, to keep them faithful. Is there something you could have said or something you could have done? This father has no idea what his son is up to. But he knows based on the way he left and things of that nature that it can't be good. If he were a real person who is not symbolic of God, then I can only imagine that he is on his knees every day praying for his son to be okay, for him to return to him. We do see, however, in verse 17 and 18 and 19, we do see a mention of this father in the eyes of the younger son. We note that in this situation, he has finally hit rock bottom. The older son later notes that it has been years, these many years, that this is going on. We see that this younger son has finally hit rock bottom. After all of his wasteful, prodigal living, he has nothing left. We note that a famine has come and he hasn't saved enough for that rainy day, as it were. So as anyone would, he tries to find a job, any job that would hire him. But we note that that job was a degrading job. He's over there feeding swine. And of course, in Jewish culture, that is a you know, those are unclean animals. So he is left to feeding these unclean animals and trying and he's so hungry, he's not being paid enough. This job is degrading. It's not paying him enough to eat. It's not paying him a living wage, as we might say. You know, that phrase has gone out into the culture in recent years. So he comes to his senses. Finally, he comes to his senses, as many do when they hit rock bottom. He thinks about his father, and he remembers what life was like when he was under the protection and the guidance and the love and the household of his family, of his father. He recalls his father. He recalls his wealth. And we see how well that is his servants, he treated his servants, how well he treated them. When someone like him falls so far, it's not unusual for him to think of the better times, to be reminded of what life was like when things were good, when someone truly loved him. So if you have children living at home now, give them something to want to return to. We note as well that this particular man, that this father, he treated his servants well. He treated the people under his hire well. And the sons saw this. He was a man who was good to the people that worked for him. He was a man who was good to those around him. And he saw this and realized, this is the man that I need to go back home to. Of course, he's not expecting much, as we will see. I do say that we should discipline our children. I say give them something to return to. We should discipline our children, but we need to be loving too. We see just how loving this father is in the next point when he returns. In the next point, the good father receives, verses 20 through 24. Let's read that now. And he arose, the son arose, and came to his father. And when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. The good father receives. We see a hint. We see a glimmer of what this father is doing while his son is away here in verse 20. He is waiting for him. Often in depictions, you see him sitting on the front porch, pining away. Well, maybe he was doing that, maybe not. But all it says is that he saw him afar off. Perhaps he was working in the field, or he just happened to be looking outside at this time. Whatever the case, at the moment that he caught a glimpse of his son, what does he do? We see in verse 20, he does three things. He first has compassion on his son. In our society, we have the image of the tough American man. He doesn't show emotion at all unless it's anger, right? That's the picture we see of the tough American man. That's not what we see here. We see a man who loves his son. He loves his son no matter what, and he's not afraid to show it. He first has compassion on him, perhaps seeing the state that he's in. Perhaps he's wearing tattered and dirty clothes, as we've read previously. That's very likely the case. There's not an angry bone in his body. You know, he took his wealth and he spent it and wasted it. That was his. Shouldn't he be angry at this? No. He's happy. He's overjoyed that his son is here. That pity that one feels. He feels this pity that you feel when someone you love is in trouble. But he doesn't stop with that, does he? We note that he's excited. He's excited. And we can tell that because he has this truly emotional display when his son returns, when he sees his son, short of working out or some sports-related thing, what motivates us to run? This man ran to his son. What motivates us to run? Why? It's strong emotion. For instance, we learn about this fight or flight response to certain things that might be out there. When running away from something, we're probably afraid of it. When running towards something, we might be trying to fight it. But that's not what's happening here. This father isn't afraid. He's not ready to fight. This is another emotion that he's feeling. He's feeling love. He's feeling excitement that his son has returned. He hasn't seen his son in who knows how long. We note later it may have been years. He wasn't sure if his son were dead or alive or what trouble he was getting himself into. But here he is. Perhaps a bit tattered, but alive. He's so happy. And when he reaches his son, we really see the affection that he shows. We see that he's affectionate, that he falls on his neck, it says. We see that that is a hug. He hugs his son. And I can only imagine that big bear hug that you would give your son that has gone away and now has returned. He hugs him so much. I can only imagine that it's such a lovely scene. But he doesn't stop there. He kisses his son as well. We see that this father, he loves his son, and he's not afraid to show it. The son cannot mistake the motivation behind these actions. And it's not even a conscious choice necessarily, I don't think. He's just so excited that he cannot help but to show the love that he has for his son. He's so glad to see him. And I'll be honest, whenever my dad and I hugged as adults, it felt a little awkward. And, at some point I tried to figure out why it would feel awkward. And eventually I realized that it didn't matter. He was my dad, and I loved him. My father-in-law hugs me. And let me tell you, that's even more awkward, because I've only known this guy for a few years. But I've gotten used to it, and now I've come to expect it. My brother and I will hug, but it's one of those bro hugs, right? Where you take him by the hand, then you say, oh, come in here, yeah. It's one of them bro hugs, right? That's not what's going on here. You know, I don't kiss my brother. I don't kiss my father-in-law. But the kisses that we're seeing here is in this particular culture, and in many cultures even today, it's a common greeting to kiss. And we see in Romans 16:16 that the culture back then, what does it say there? Greet one another with a holy kiss, right? The churches of Christ greet you. So we note that kissing back then was much more commonplace between people as a greeting. It was never on the lips. Instead, it was on one cheek and then sometimes on the other. Still, it was a great show of emotion and love for this boy. Before he hears anything from the son, in his excitement, you know, the son does say stuff, but I can only imagine that he's so excited that the father doesn't even really hear what his son is saying. He just says, bring out the fatted calf. Here is a ring. I'm so glad you're home. In his excitement, he throws this celebration. You know, in truth, it didn't matter what he did. His son is back now. He's home. Then we see a glimmer. A glimpse of what he thought while his son was gone. He didn't know if his son were alive or dead. So it was as if he were dead. After all, he demanded a part of his inheritance, something that wasn't entitled to him until after his father died. But now his father rejoices that he has returned, as if he had come back to life. What a blessing. What a blessing. But we note in the latter part of this parable that not everyone was making merry at this time. So we see the fourth point here. The good father educates. The good father educates. We see that the older brother, in verses 25 through 30, the older brother, he hears the commotion that's going on here. He finds out what's happened, and he's indignant. He's angry about what's happening. The father hears of this. We see in verse 28, there in the latter part of that verse, therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. His father hears of this, and he goes out to this older son, and he pleads with him. You know, his younger son is back. He wants his family to be whole again. But there is this one holdout. And the son tells him why he's upset in verse 29 and 30. He's jealous. He's jealous. Jealous that the father didn't give him the same attention that the younger son was now receiving. He felt entitled. Since he's been with him this whole time, why hasn't he ever received this same treatment? Well, then the father tells him why in verses 31 and 32. And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again and was lost and is found. You see, this older brother forgot one thing. It's not about you. It's not about you. He's so self-centered that he can't see that it's not about him. His father reminds him of this by telling him that all that he has belongs to him. He has the two-thirds portion of the inheritance that now belongs to this older son. So now it all belongs to him or will. He's teaching him that his brother needs the attention right now. His brother needs that attention right now. He needs to feel like a part of this family. Because he is. Because he is. He needs to feel like he is welcome and that he can and should stay. On a personal note, recall I mentioned that my brother at some point, my father was a father of two sons. My brother at some point strayed away. I remember I grew up in a similar situation here. Well, when my brother came back, my father didn't embrace him, not like this father did. And as a result, or at least perhaps it was as a result, maybe he would have done this anyway, but he went astray again, and this time he went further away. Again, I don't know if our father could have done anything differently that my brother would have stayed, but I know that what he did didn't help. Eventually, my brother did come back, but not after much heartache and much sorrow. By way of conclusion, this is a parable about a father with two sons. This parable is really about God. It's really about God and his sheep that go astray. God is the Father here. And those who go astray, that prodigal son, and those who remain, that older brother. You know, there are plenty of lessons that we can take from this, and that this from this that the parable, you know, the parable is meant to be interpreted in a certain way. When a member goes astray and returns, embrace him. I mean, why not? Throw a party. Throw a party. Not a party like the world thinks of a party, obviously, but a party like we see here, where we see a celebration, happiness, joy that somebody has returned to the fold. And don't resent the fact that we don't always throw parties for those who stay. We need to keep in mind the lesson from the older brother. We can certainly make these applications here on this Father's Day. We can see how great this father was to both of his sons. As fathers, for those of us who are fathers, let us be like this father, loving our children, embracing them, and teaching them the truth. Just as God is our father, let us be a good father to our children. If you're not even part of this family, and I know, I think everyone here who is accountable is a member of his church, is part of that family. But if you're watching online right now, sorry for the loud noise just now. Let us be like this father. If you're not part of this family, you have a chance to be part of this family today. If you are that prodigal son, return, and we will rejoice with you. Those of you here know how to respond. In a moment on the screen, for those who are watching on the live stream, we'll show you how you can respond to that invitation online. We want you to obey the gospel. We want you to be part of that family and have that Heavenly Father, the same Father that we read about in this parable, to love you, to wait for you, to educate you, to rejoice with you. And we too will rejoice. If you are that prodigal son, if you are that one who has wandered away, we will rejoice with you should you return. And if you become that older brother and are resentful for that fact, you've got to repent too. And recognize that it's not all about you. That sometimes we have to give our attention to somebody else for a little while and not be so prideful. If you have a need, please let us know at this time as we sing this song.